Hi, I'm Mike Sainsbury, and welcome to this ASI cast in which our research director, Richard Marks, interviews Jane Clark, the CEO and Managing Director of CIM. CIM is the Coalition for Innovative Media Measurement, which, as its name suggests, is a grouping of companies from across the industry that have come together to find solutions to the complex audience measurement problems we currently face. Richard and Jane discuss the range of issues top of mind for the CIM stakeholders currently, in this recording, which was made a few weeks ago, just before our annual international conferences in Nice.
Hi, Jane. Well, you've been a regular at ASI conferences in recent years, but for the wider listenership to the podcast, can you just remind us about CIM and what its mission statement is?
Sure. So CIM stands for the Coalition for Innovative Media Measurement, and it's a group of buyers and sellers of media, primarily focused in the U.S. And, you know, we have a mission of trying to accelerate innovation in cross-media measurement and also bringing more granular measurement to television. And actually, these, you know, two parts of our mission are kind of merging in the current environment anyway. So, you know, we're really working to get scaled cross-media measurement. We do all kinds of proof of concept pilot tests to test out new technologies. We do white papers to just keep everybody educated on all the changes in technology. And, you know, we have a lot of discussion amongst the members too to just help to move the industry forward. We're kind of like a JIC for innovation because we don't have JICs in the U.S.
Because they contravene your antitrust laws, I think, don't they, technically?
Yes, no, everyone says that it probably wouldn't be a problem, but, you know, if we actually did have JICs here, but nobody wants to have a lawsuit, so
no.
So we just do everything except actually put out tenders for measurement.
I remember when you launched back in 2009, certainly in Europe there was a lot of excitement because people misread the announcement as being a JIC, but as you say, it's very much focused on the innovation area of things. What sort of companies have you got as your stakeholders?
Well, we have all the cable and broadcast networks, so all the, you know, major big multi-platform media companies, and we do have a video focus, so it's not as if you know, and some of our solutions would be happy to include all media, but we have a particular focus on video as it's moving across different technology distribution platforms. And we also have then the media buying holding companies. So all the three big holding companies, GroupM, Publicis, and Omnicom, and also Kara. And we had some advertisers in the beginning, but it's been very challenging to keep them engaged on some of these long-term projects. And so we mostly work through the ANA, who is a CIM member, the Association of National Advertisers. And we have a very close relationship with them and with their initiative with the 4As, the American Association of Advertising Agencies. They have a joint ownership of Ad ID, which is a standardized identifier for ads. And so CIM has a relationship with them to advocate for that across the whole media ecosystem. We can talk more about that a little later.
Yeah, sure. And more recently, I think you've got Google on board.
Yes. Yes, Google, you have to, the bylaws do specify that someone has to have, you know, a large percentage. I think it's up to 40% of their revenue from videos. So they qualify because of YouTube. And they're also very, I think they just also want to better understand, you know, how the TV companies think about third-party measurement. And so, you know, in all these companies, it's sort of the heads of research kind of moving into more analytics as well, analytics and attribution. But it tends to be the sort of heads of measurement and research and insights who are the members.
And you've got, there's an awful lot of different concerns, worries, aspirations going on in media at the moment in terms of specifically video. What would you say are the hot topics that you're being particularly asked by your members to focus on?
Well, I mean, obviously, you saw Nielsen's announcement about their Netflix measurement, and I think they're going to be speaking also at ASI. So they had a there's they have these national client meetings twice a year, and I went to theirs, the one yesterday, and so they spoke about this and just about streaming measurement in general. So either using the router meters, as you call them, or the router meters, as we call them, or the streaming meters, I guess, as Nielsen is calling them, or also using fingerprinting, which is the method that they're using to measure Netflix. There's a lot of interest in, being able to get total ratings or total measurement, total impressions. We're really moving towards, on the ad side, at least, in a way that we can have for ads across platform and for content across platform, regardless of the method of monetizing, whether it's content with ads or content, without ads. There is an interest amongst the media companies in understanding, they really want to get to lifetime value of a piece of content, with ad revenue as one piece and subscription revenue as another piece, and they also have other kinds of revenue, licensing revenue, product placement revenue. There's all kinds of other ways that they link revenue to a particular piece of content. So, they're been very focused on trying to get this complete measurement of a piece of content, that the audience for that across all platforms. And additionally, the agencies, and the advertisers are very focused on getting ad measurement across platforms, and standardizing those metrics so that they're comparable. In the US here, we actually don't have ad ratings in television, which I think you do have in other countries around the world, or you at least have the minute, the commercial minute rating. We have this weird agreement everyone came to about, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago, of called C3, which is they take all the ads in an entire program and average them together and come up with this sort of average commercial rating over 3 days, the C3, or over 7 days, the C7. And that's kind of hard to compare to, a duration-weighted viewable impression filtered for non-human traffic and fraud, and in target, audience impression in digital video. So there's a lot of discussion here, and sort of groups working together, particularly through the Media Rating Council, the MRC, to increasingly align these metrics across platforms. Most likely moving away from, ratings to impressions, but duration weighted impressions. So television's going to have to make, some changes there. We've actually just commissioned a project with Artie Bulgren, who, has retired from research at ESPN, and he's going to be confidentially going around and talking to a lot of people about sort of why there's such resistance to ad ratings in television, and what we could do to push this forward. So,
It is really hard when the industry's used to one way of doing things to change that. I won't name names, but I'm aware of one company, sorry, one country that also includes the last 10 minutes of the program and the first 10 minutes of the next program in that advertising average, which just to get the highest possible figure, which can be a concern. Obviously, if you're then trying to compare that to a lot of internet advertising, it is effectively freestanding. It hasn't necessarily got a context to it. It's an ad that you can measure as a freestanding piece of advertising content, as it were.
right. No,
And
and there's
so
always been this attitude in television that the responsibility is only to bring the viewer to the ad. But what if the creative, is a lousy creative? Then they shouldn't, the media company shouldn't be responsible for holding the viewer through the ad break. However, I think that that's kind of changing with digital, because there are ways that you can get around that if you can actually just get like a start, you know, a video impression, a video start, and you can have a half viewed video or 100% viewed videos. There's platforms now in the digital realm, so Hulu, which takes the content from all of the, three or four of the big media companies now, and has, you know, their service with advertising, you know, that you can get over the top and on all devices. And they will only, charge for ads that are 100% viewed. So they're setting a pretty high standard there, and advertisers like that a lot, you know.
Interesting. Well, you alluded earlier to the work you're doing around that sort of the tracking of content and advertising across different platforms. What current SIM projects are you most excited about with regard to that particular element?
Well, we've been working actually with the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers in the U.S., although it is a global body. To try to create an open standard audio watermark that would not, you know, be proprietary to any one measurement vendor. And Kantar has actually gone through all the testing. This has taken a couple of years here and has been selected and is in the final stages of, voting and approvals. This is a bunch of engineers who really dot their I's and cross their T's. And we hope by the first quarter that will be, you know, an approved standard. And then we're hoping to open up, you know, innovation on top of that. There are so many things that you could do, you know, with an open standard watermark that can be used throughout the industry that will have embedded within it a content identifier for content from the Entertainment ID Registry and an ad ID for the ads. And so, you know, the content and the ads will basically know what, they'll all have a standardized same name and they'll know what they are. So it's like smart content and smart ads. They can be read on a machine and a set-top box and a television set. It could be read on a device outside of the set acoustically. And we're just sorting through kind of all the best methods to use this in digital as well. And, you know, there's so many things that you can do with this in terms of second screen syncing, not only measurement, there's all kinds of workflow enhancements. You know, in the U.S., we're moving much more towards automation and kind of programmatic TV. This is another big hot topic here, which is as programmatic is growing rapidly in digital, it's also moving into television with audience-based buying and people buying audiences instead, you know, buying more targeted audiences like an auto intender or a pizza lover or something, you know, instead of just using age and gender. And so even in television, we don't have fully addressable advertising yet, but as the industry is moving towards that over the next 5 years or so, you know, the technology, the base, the installed base has to be upgraded to enable that. But they started with this kind of we call it program manual in television, because you use the audience data for planning and optimizing different shows and networks and day parts. And then when they actually go to make the insertion order, they again revert back to buying it on age and gender. But they've used all of this additional, you know, more granular data to help to find the right target. So, you know, it sounds like sort of a fancy way that we've always been doing this, using, you know, MRI to optimize shows, but it's actually now, they're actually now selling on it. So they base the estimates and the forecasts on the ability to reach a certain number of people who are auto intenders or who are pizza lovers.
I know Sky have been doing that in the UK with their set-top box data, which they overlay with consumer data to effect, I think they call them biographics.
Yes, yes. Well, that's taken off in a very big way here in the U.S., leading towards, you know, Sky can be fully addressable. And some of the local advertising dollars in the U.S. are fully addressable. But most of the national dollars are not yet. So they just do this audience-based buying in the meantime. But so as we move to this whole area of increased automation, you know, we're hoping that this open standard audio watermark can enable and sort of act as a plumbing layer to help, you know, as machines are talking to machines instead of having so many humans involved. It's I don't know if I should be happy about this or sad that we're increasing automation, but it seems inevitable, so we might as well do it the right way.
Well, I mean, if you go through most industries over the last 100 years, really, every industry has kind of argued that it couldn't be automated right up until the point it was. So I guess the objective is to have that automation happen in the most logical way that preserves the essence of the industry. So as opposed to, you know, just resisting it and having it being imposed on you. You mentioned the open standard. You've commissioned Kantar to work on that. So how does that work? At what point do Kantar hand over their IP or make it open standard? Because obviously, presumably what they've pitched is their proprietary system, which at some point will become open standard. What's in it for Kantar in sort of opening up in that way?
Well, you know, they do have to receive a licensing fee from everybody else who uses it. However, it has to be what's called RAND pricing, or reasonable and non-discriminatory pricing. So they do receive a small licensing fee from everyone who uses the watermark, all the other vendors, for whatever purpose, not just audience measurement. And you know, there may be IP issues here with Nielsen and Kantar. We're walking a fine line here about making sure that nobody's stepping on anyone's IP here. But we're in this for the long run. And I think that Kantar hasn't made completely clear yet, you know, what they'll be doing in other countries, and if they'll just, you know, this is actually a new watermark. It's not the same one that they've been using in other countries. It's the same company. It was from the Civolution acquisition that they made.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is new because it has embedded identifiers in it, and it also has up to 4 levels of, distribution identifiers and a timestamp. So it's actually kind of, there's two aspects to the watermark, and there's different layers of the watermark, you know. So, and you can actually put the identifiers in early on, as soon as a piece of content is produced, you can insert the identifier, and it can be used in the professional space as well, sort of the pre-broadcast space. And this is where we see that there could be a lot of workflow improvements, because we have situations in the U.S., particularly with ads, you know, where ads are passed around from agency to network to, you know, measurement company, and they no, everybody calls them the same names. There's nothing automated. I mean, everybody calls them a different name. Sorry about that. And there's nothing automated in the process. This is like emails, and it used to be faxes. And, people are doing insertion orders over email. And if you look at the different, we always tell the story of the piece of content, 2.5 men, like how many different ways are there to spell that? And, so there's all kinds of inefficiency in the system now when you have ads and content that get rekeyed by humans everywhere throughout the whole system. And so the part of the watermark that just deals with the identifier can really help sort of clean up and make faster and more efficient the professional space. And then this watermark then also at the time of broadcast acts more like the standard watermarks that have been out there now from Nielsen and Kantar, which putting in a timestamp and some kind of distribution identifier who gets the credit for the audience viewing.
Thanks for making the time to speak to us today.
Great. Thank you so much.